Welcome to episode 216 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. If you want to burn fat, gain energy, and enhance your health by changing when you eat, not what you eat, with no calorie counting, then this show is for you. I'm Melanie Avalon, author of What, When, Wine, Lose Weight and Feel Great with Paleo-Style Meals, Intermittent Fasting, and Wine. And I'm here with my co-host, Jen Stevens, author of Delay, Don't Deny, Living an Intermittent Fasting Lifestyle. For more on us, check out ifpodcast.com, melanieavalon.com, and jenstevens.com. Please remember, the thoughts and opinions on this podcast do not constitute medical advice or treatment. So, pour yourself a cup of black coffee, a mug of tea, or even a glass of wine, if it's that time, and get ready for the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Okay, friends. People often ask me, what is the one supplement I cannot imagine my life without? And while there are a lot of supplements out there, a lot of ones that I love, a lot of ones that I advocate, there is one supplement that inspired me to create a whole supplement line, and that's because I take it every single day, and I really can't imagine my life without it. That would be Serapeptase. And I'm about to tell you how to get up to 15% off on a special bottle version that we have that also saves you money. So Serapeptase is a proteolytic enzyme created by the Japanese silkworm. Now we make it in a lab, so it is vegan. When you take this enzyme in the fasted state, it actually goes into your bloodstream and it breaks down problematic proteins in your body. These are things that your immune system is often reacting to and that create inflammation. That's why it can do incredible, amazing things like clear your sinuses. That's why I first started taking it. You can completely say goodbye to allergy meds with Serapeptase. It reduces inflammation and pain. My friend just started taking it for her back pain and told me she was shocked at how effective it was, more so than the pain pills she normally was taking. It can help reduce cholesterol. It's even been shown in clinical studies to break down amyloid plaque in vitro and in vivo. Basically, it is a wonder supplement. And what's super cool about it is that it specifically breaks down those problematic non-living proteins. It doesn't harm healthy tissue. It actually helps protect that. That's because the function of the original enzyme in the silkworm is to break down the cocoon of the silkworm without actually harming the silkworm itself. And there aren't studies on this, but I really believe it can help catalyze your fast by enhancing the natural process of autophagy. Again, not studies on that, but from a mechanistic standpoint, it totally makes sense. Here's the thing. I was taking so many different brands of Serapeptase, and they always seemed a little hard on my stomach and have problematic ingredients in them, especially special enteric coatings where they wouldn't disclose what that was made of, which meant it probably contained problematic plastics. I knew I needed to make a change. That's why I created my Avalon X Serapeptase. It's what launched my Avalon X line. I will never stop taking it. It's one of my favorite things in my life, and the effects I experience are profound, and I hear that from all of you guys as well. We test it multiple times for purity and potency. It's free of all problematic fillers and common allergens. It comes in a glass bottle to help prevent leaching of plastics into ourselves and the environment. And we even use the minimum amount of stickiness in the label on the bottle to help reduce problematic compounds. So if you want to tackle your inflammation, clear your brain fog, oh, it's amazing for brain fog, stop your allergies, attack amyloid plaque, reduce pain, so many things, you need Serapeptase. And you can get 10% off with the coupon code Melanie Avalon. But here's another thing. We actually have a special large bottle. It's the only supplement that we have right now in a large bottle. It's the 180 version, and it saves you money. If Serapeptase is a part of your daily life, like it is mine, you definitely want our large bottle size, 180 capsules. It's the best way to save. And again, you can save even more with my Melanie Avalon 10% discount, or you can get 15% off that as well if you get a subscription, which, by the way, with a subscription, you could pause or cancel anytime after your first order. So it kind of makes sense to do a subscription because you save even more. If you want a supplement that you can actually feel the difference, I promise you, Serapeptase is the way to go. And then you might end up like me and want to give it as gifts to everybody because it's that incredible and can address so many issues. You can get this at avalonx.us. That's AVALONX.US. Again, there is the 90 capsule size and the 180 capsule size. You save more with the 180. Use the coupon code MelanieAvalon for 10% off or get a subscription for 15% off. And we'll put all this information in the show notes. Hi, everybody, and welcome. This is episode number 216 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. I'm Melanie Avalon, and I'm here with Jen Stevens.
Hi, everybody.
How are you today, Jen?
I am doing great. It is summery. It is hot. I'm so happy.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I know you're sad.
Wait, can I tell you a story related to that?
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry. That was a joke. Yes, please tell me this story. I would love to hear it.
Okay, perfect. It's a little bit longer. It's my crazy epic weekend last weekend. Would you like to hear?
Does it involve cryotherapy?
It involves, I could insert that if I wanted, not entirely.
Well, I just felt like it did since I mentioned being hot.
It involves being hot.
Okay. Yes, I would love to hear about it.
It just involves the epicness of a weekend. Okay, are we ready? So Friday, I interviewed Gary Tobbs.
Oh, that's exciting. How was he?
Oh my goodness. It was...
Well, I mean, what are you going to say? Nothing.
It was incredible. And so for listeners who are not familiar with Gary Tobbs, he's wrote a lot. He wrote Good Calories, Bad Calories. He wrote The Case Against Sugar. He wrote one more in between and Why We Get Fat, I think. And then...
Yes, that's it.
Yeah. And then most recently...
I read the first two. Yeah.
Most recently, he wrote The Case for Keto. But I mean, I've been following his work. Like, I know I interview a lot of really amazing people on the show, but when it's somebody that I've been following for that long, because I basically read Good Calories, Bad Calories when I first started getting obsessed with the low-carb diet. I mean, I read that before, like, Paleo Solution. I think that was, like, the first thing I read.
Oh, can I clarify something that when I said I read the first two, I don't mean The Case for Sugar. The two that you named, the first two, were not his first two. His first two were Good Calories, Bad Calories, and Why Do We Get Fat? I read his first two.
I said those out of order.
Yeah. You know, Melanie, like you said, that was the book that made me realize, oh my gosh, there's more than just calories.
Which one? Good Calories, Bad Calories?
Yeah. I mean, I read it with my jaw on the floor. And even if all the, you know, the carbohydrate hypothesis, whatever, even if it's not all 100% exactly like he lays it out, it still opened my mind to, wow, the body is more complicated. So yeah, I'm fangirling right here with you.
I know. So, and what's interesting about Gary is he's not a scientist. He's a science journalist. So his books are... They're very historical. So they cover like the history of everything.
Well, like Michael Pollan.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that. So I was nervous because like I said, I've been following him for so long. I talk about Good Calories, Bad Calories and What, When, Why, and I reference him. And then B, I get really nervous. I think I've talked about this before, interviewing journalists because they are interviewers. So they know if I'm asking good questions. So I'm like, I have to show up. I have to have good questions. It was so exciting because he literally stopped me multiple times. Like he would be talking, answering my question, and then he would stop and just be like, you're asking really good questions. I was like, oh my goodness.
I mean, I know that's what you wanted to hear, right?
I know. I was so excited.
You're like, I don't care. That's all I want.
I know. I was like, I was glowing. And at the very end, he was like, normally I ask them if they want to come back on the show, but I didn't even ask that. And he was like, I would love to come back on. He was like, he gave me four amazing words. I think like intelligent, sometimes naive, one other word, challenging questions. I was like, oh my goodness. And at the end, when we stopped recording, he iterated that he really meant everything that he said. So
by the way, I noticed you said iterated.
I know, every time.
I was paying attention.
I never say reiterate ever now. Listeners, iterate means the same thing as reiterate. So to iterate.
That's so funny.
So I was head over heels, but I got done with the interview. This was Friday afternoon, and I noticed my air was not, it wasn't cold air. So I called maintenance, and I did not have any expectations that they would come. So when they hadn't come by 10 p.m., I was like, you know me, I can't do heat. So I went to Home Depot at 10 p.m., right before they closed, got a portable air conditioning unit to install, came back, opened it. It was not the right thing, like inside of the box.
Oh my gosh, if someone had returned.
I think so, and like stolen.
They're supposed to check that.
I know, but what's funny is you're not expecting, so it was a dehumidifier, but a different brand, but you're not expecting it to not be the right thing. So it took me so long to figure out it was not the right thing. I was like looking at the instructions. I was like, this just doesn't match the picture. Like, it's like, I can't figure out how to install this. So then I went to Walmart at 11 p.m. and got another unit, installed it, just like haphazardly threw it at the window because I knew it was for one night only. Okay, wait, the story's not over. So then the next day, are you ready? The next day, I was eagerly waiting for the maintenance people to call because this is the South. Like, I can't do heat.
Well, I like heat, but I wouldn't like no air conditioning in the summer heat. Okay, so.
And I had something that I was needed to be dressed up for and like calm and collected that night. And I was like, I'm going to be a mess. Like, this is awful. So I was very trigger happy with anybody who, like, if I had a missed call, I would call them back because I was hoping it was maintenance. So I had a missed call and I called it back. And he was like, hello. I was like, I had a missed call from this number. And he was like, he's like, oh, it must have been like an accident. And I was like, oh, okay, sorry. I'm just like waiting on a call from somebody. And he was like, well, who are you waiting on a call from? I was like, well, and he was like, oh, it doesn't matter. It's probably not anything. And I was like, yeah. So then I hung up and then I realized I had accidentally called Gary Tops.
Oh, that's so funny.
By accident.
But he had accidentally called you first?
He had accidentally called me, I guess, but I called him back. But the thing is, I think he probably knew it was me when I called. It was just very awkward. I was like, this is my life.
That's so funny. It must be air conditioner week because Sherry, who is my co-host for Life Lessons, she just had to have her air conditioner replaced.
It's, yeah.
Well, you know, when the seasons change, you're asking it to do something new that it hasn't been doing. And that's when it often fails.
They said the person before had put in too much Freon. So it actually like made it overshoot and short circuited or something. I don't know.
That's interesting. I never heard of too much Freon.
Yeah, he seemed surprised. But that was a possibility. So that's my epic story about.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that Gary was great.
He was. And I sent him a copy of my book.
Oh, good. I mentioned him in Delay Don't Deny.
Oh, really?
His book is in my, you know, Good Calories, Bad Calories is in the back where I talk about, you know, things to read. Just the whole idea that it's more than just calories. I mean, really, that is mind-blowing considering what we had been told. And people still think it.
One of the good moments, and I can't wait to air the episode, but one of the good moments in our conversation was I asked him if my interpretation of his insulin theory was basically, was this what he was saying? And he was like, yes, that's it exactly. It's that we get fat, not so much because we are gaining weight, but that we lose the ability to lose weight. Like we lose the ability to burn fat. And so we necessarily gain weight.
I know one way he puts it. Tell me if this is what he says. I think it is. This kind of stuck in my head. We're not gaining weight because we're overeating. We're overeating because we're gaining weight. It's like the drive to overeat happens first. I think I've heard him say that.
Yeah, that's one of his main tenets. Because one of the interesting things that we discussed was, because this is something I've been thinking about a lot. I don't know if I can properly articulate it. But basically, okay, so if you're on a super high carb, super low fat diet, the insulin response can make it so that you might never be tapping into your fat stores. So you basically lose the ability to burn the fat that you have, even if, and this is a nuance that we've discussed a lot on this podcast and something that I talked about with Gary, it's that carbs themselves don't readily become fat. So say you were eating just carbs, it would be hard to gain fat from that, but you, at the very least, it would make it very, very hard to burn your existing fat. Compared to if you ate a low carb, super high fat diet, it actually would be relatively easy to store fat from what you're eating, but you would be burning your fat easily.
And it all has to do with insulin and whether your insulin's high versus low.
Yeah. So like the ironic thing about those two situations is in the high carb situation, it actually might be hard to gain weight, but you're probably not going to lose weight. And so as a consequence, you probably are going to slowly gain because it's unlikely that you would be at maintenance all the time. Compared to high fat, low carb, it actually might be relatively easy to store excess calories as fat, but you're going to be easily tapping into your stores. So it's easier for you to lose weight. It's hard to articulate.
Well, just again, it has to do with what your insulin is doing. If your insulin is high, 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 and you know Gary's main theory is it's only going to be high if you're overdoing carbs. His connection is you're only going to have high insulin in a high carb state. That's the problem for him, why he tends to be low carb or is low carb. He doesn't tend to be low carb. He is low carb.
Mm-hmm. It was really, really epic. We ended the discussion. We went into a major tangent on regenerative agriculture because he talks about that a little bit in The Case for Keto. And I want that to be his next book so bad. He admitted he hasn't really like researched it that much. he's not convinced on the sustainability of like regenerative agriculture or anything like that. So I'd be really excited if he actually would go down that rabbit hole.
Yep. So much to still learn.
I know. So yeah, sorry, that was a lot. Is there anything with you?
Doing our backyard remodel still. It's going on forever. We're just the slowest remodelers ever since the pandemic began. We've been
I know. I feel like you're in perpetual remodel state.
We got the plans for this drawn in fall of 2020. That's when we had the architect come over. And we were like, we've never been dragging our feet. It's just taken forever to do everything. But we're finally starting to have things progress. They're building on the back of the garden shed that we were doing. The screen porch is about to have the concrete floor put in. The pool is about to have, I mean, you know, we're waiting. Concrete is next. And then so, you know, we might have it done. We might be able to get in the pool before summer is over.
I love looking at pictures of like houses and stuff. So send me pictures when it's done.
I will. I'm just really excited. I can't wait to get out on the screen porch. So anyway, what I've been doing is sitting in the front yard. Did I tell you this already?
Yeah, I think. And read books.
Yeah, we got two Adirondack chairs. We have this area in the front that's like got pine trees in it and it's got pine straw. And so it's shady. So I'm sitting in the front yard and it just so happens my neighbor across the street, they gutted their house. They just bought it. Been a part of an estate and it sat vacant for a while. And so we've never had anyone live there. So they gutted it and they're redoing it. So they're there all the time and they're retired. So they're similar age to me. And so they're there doing the work and I'm sitting in the front yard. So I'm like out there visiting, like in my front yard with neighbors. People walk by and their dogs. So I'm like getting to know the neighbors in a whole new way. I feel almost like a weirdo. They're like, there's that lady sitting in her yard again. Because I was never in the yard. Now I'm always in the front yard, just sitting there reading or doing whatever. It's funny. But today she came and sat with me. So we're both sitting in the front yard together. And I was like, this is what a neighborhood's supposed to be.
I love it. Reminds me of Mr. Rogers' neighborhood.
Well, because before I always sat in the back. You know, we tend to sit in the backyard and the private spaces. But I can't go back there because it looks like the moon. Like, I'm not kidding. Anyway, it's going to be nice, but I'm going to make an effort to still sit in the front yard sometimes.
I love it.
Yeah. Get to know the neighbors.
Awesome.
All right. So shall we get started? We have some feedback.
Sure.
This is from Jenny, and the subject is fat rolls not symmetrical. She says, hi, ladies. You are fabulous, and I am definitely binge listening to all of your episodes and am a member of DDD Social Network and have read all the books. That's awesome, Jenny. I'm so glad to hear it. She says, I would love to have a local group or community, but my parents are fasting now, and that is huge support. Listening to the episodes, I started at the most current and went backwards, and I'm currently down to episode 108. Oh, that would be fun, Melanie, listening to us backwards.
Oh, that would stress me out.
I don't know. It's funny.
Yeah, that's funny. Oh, wow.
Someone left a question about fitting into jeans, and one side of her body had a fat roll, the other did not. I definitely noticed this as well after about my second month fasting. I'm now a few months in, and I have not noticed it as much, but it is still a bit different, although very subtle. Just wanted you to know, the other listener is not on her own. I love fasting and have lost 20 pounds since February 18th of 2021. I was a Weight Watcher lifetime member. I had maintained my weight for 15 years, and suddenly when I turned 43, I gained 25 pounds and was unable to lose it. I am 54 and currently in the normal weight range, about 135, and would like to still lose 10 pounds, but 130 was my goal once starting IF. I'm still a size 6 and know that my body probably could go down at least a size or two. I'm no longer super concerned about my weight. I recently went on vacation out of the country and felt more comfortable in a bathing suit than I have over the past several years. So I would say I am a success already. Thanks again, Jenny.
Awesome. Well, I love that email from Jenny. And I think that's such a beautiful place to reach that. And I think a lot of people experience that where you might have a goal weight, but once, especially with fasting and things like that, when you start feeling more and more comfortable in your skin, the numbers seem less important. Then on the flip side, there are people that do experience that, but the number is more important. You know, like it's almost like the number is more important than what they're experiencing in their body. So it's just really interesting.
And a lot of that is undoing the years of like, for example, Jenny was a Weight Watcher, going to Weight Watchers meetings, I would guess, or maybe not going to them. But anyone who did go to meetings like that, you know, there's a weigh-in and it's number on the scale and that is it.
Oh, man, that would be so stressful.
Yes, yes. And I think it makes us get this emotional connection to a number that is more important than anything else, because that's what's drilled into your head. Again, like calories in, calories out gets drilled into your head. You are your number on the scale gets drilled into your head. And so you just get stuck with that. And so it's really hard to break free of that. You know, that's the thing when in all the communities that I've seen, the people who struggle, and it is so much tied up to our diet history. That's why I had to stop weighing and seeing a number, because, you know, even though I had body recomposition and I was smaller, you know, I've told this story a million times, I started to get hung up on the number. And that was ridiculous. I didn't want to be smaller, but I wanted to see a smaller number. I'm like, well, that's just dumb.
Yeah, 100%. And also, so Jenny's experience with the uneven fat, that also speaks to the fact that almost the fact that calories aren't just calories, or like, you know, weight loss isn't just weight loss. Like the fact that certain areas of our body might respond differently just goes to show how much is not, you know, it's not just about the calories and what's in our mouth. I mean, because I'm assuming the reason that we might have uneven fat loss would be completely based, I mean, it must be like hormonal. So
that is fascinating though. What if we all gained and lost irregularly? Wouldn't that be wacky? I don't mean like just a little bit irregularly. What if like you only gained weight in your right leg or something? I mean, it's kind of a miracle that we kind of stay fairly symmetrical at all, really. I don't know.
That's something I wonder. And that was something Gary talks about in the case for keto, which was the amount of fat cells we have, which I had never pondered before. Is it in the billions? I think so. And then like the concept that, and I don't know if I so much agree with his theory about it, but he was saying that like the amount of like weight gain, like the amount of technical calories that would lead to that would be like, I should pull out my notes. He says that an obese person may have 70 billion fat cells. Each contains 0.6 millionth a gram of fat, which is the correlation of 1/5 millionth calorie of fat. He says that if you look at it from a calorie perspective, so with weight gain, fat tissue would have to hold on to 20 excess calories per day. That's the equivalent of 1/3 the billionth of a calorie per day per fat cell. I don't know if it, you know, goes down like that, but basically this concept of just fat cells and calories and where they go and how much goes in and how much comes out, there's got to be something, so many factors beyond the amount of calories that we put in our mouth.
Which is why it still shocks me whenever I still come across something where they're like, it's only calories in, calories out. We all know that. And I'll hear somebody say that. And I'm like, I can't believe someone still thinks that. Like, I really can't believe they haven't seen any evidence presented to them that makes them understand that it is more complicated than that.
Simplistically, it is more calories went into your fat cells than calories.
That's true.
Let me just say it. And we talked about this with Gary, actually. I think where the confusion comes in is technically it is more calories went into your fat cells than calories came out of your fat cells. But that is no way even remotely the same thing as calories into your mouth versus equals, you know, or is related to calories out. It's just not. They're very similar phrases, but they're entirely different meanings.
Well, one of them implies that it is 100% in your control and you could count them and manipulate it. And the other understands that no matter how much you count and try to manipulate, you can't, because your body's doing what it's doing. Those are the two, you know, understanding that you really cannot micromanage your body that way, no matter how hard you try, is a little freeing, but also scary, because, you know, it lets you realize that it's, you know, number one, it's not your fault. But number two, you can't just easily fix it by counting.
Hi, friends. I'm about to tell you how to get 15% off my favorite blue light blocking glasses ever. So I am often asked, what are my favorite, quote, biohacking products? And something I truly, honestly cannot imagine my life without are blue light blocking glasses. So in today's modern environment, we are massively overexposed to blue light. It's a stimulating type of light which can lead to stress, anxiety, headaches, and in particular, sleep issues. blue light actually stops our bodies from producing melatonin, which is our sleep hormone. So our exposure to blue light can completely disrupt our circadian rhythm, make it hard to fall asleep, make it hard to stay asleep, and so much more. Friends, I identify as an insomniac. I would not be able to sleep without my blue light blocking glasses. I also stay up late working, and wearing blue light blocking glasses at night has made it so I can do that and still fall asleep. My absolute favorite blue light blocking glasses on the market are Bon Charge, formerly known as Blue Blocks. Bon Charge makes an array of blue light blocking glasses in all different designs so you can truly find something that fits your style and reap all of the benefits of blue light blocking. They have their clear computer glasses. You can wear those during the day, especially if you're looking at screens all day, to help with anxiety, headaches, and stress. They have their light sensitivity glasses. Those are tinged with a special yellow color, scientifically proven to boost mood, and they block even more blue light. Those are great for the day or evening. And then they have their blue light blocking glasses for sleep. Those are the ones that I put on at night while working before bed. Oh my goodness, friends, it's something you truly have to experience. You put on these glasses and it's like you just tell your brain, okay, it's time to go to sleep soon. They also have amazing blackout sleep masks. Those block 100% of light with zero eye pressure. I wear this every single night and I don't know how I would sleep without it. And you can get 15% off site-wide. Just go to boncharge.com and use the coupon code IFPODCAST to save 15%. That's boncharge.com with the coupon code IFPODCAST to save 15%. All right, now back to the show.
So basically, to re-summarize what I was saying earlier, at least with Gary's hypothesis, if the type of calories you're eating are high carb, then that makes it easy for calories to go in if you have any sort of fat with that, but very, very hard for calories to come out compared to high fat, low carb, in which calories can easily go in and out, depending.
All right. Shall we move on to our questions?
Yes.
All right, so to start things off, this is a easy, breezy, simple question, but I realized I don't know if anybody's actually asked this and we answered it. So Kyla, the subject is clean versus dirty fast. And Kyla says, hi, Melanie and Jen. I have just started IF 3 weeks ago and I'm surprised by the energy I have. I'm a nurse and I work 13-hour shifts and I'm pleased with how I feel less exhausted already. Could you please discuss clean versus dirty fasting? I've read these terms several times now and am unclear what they mean. Thank you for doing the podcast. I really enjoy listening.
Yep, that's a great question from Kyla. And, you know, I want to be clear for me. This is just my own point of view. I feel like you're either fasting clean or you're not really fasting. So I don't think that dirty fasting really should be a thing. Like, I don't think we should say, oh, I'm just dirty fasting. Well, you know, at some point you're just not actually fasting. So I think you're either fasting clean or not really fasting. So anyway, I don't like the word dirty fast at all. It just feels, I don't like dirty in general, like eating dirty, fasting dirty. It sounds bad or wrong to me. And so that's just my own personal, you know, word kind of a feeling. Anyway, let's talk about what the clean fast is. I talk about this in great detail in Fast, Feast, Repeat, so much detail that I have two whole chapters about it. So if you want to read the whole, you know, ins and outs of the idea of clean fasting, you know, find those two chapters in Fast, Feast, Repeat. Fun fact for anyone who doesn't know it, we actually coined the term clean fast in the Delay, Don't Deny intermittent fasting support group. I believe it was in 2017, right around there, we started using the terminology clean fast. And it stuck. And it really makes me proud to see that that's now kind of being used all over the place. And the fact that we originated it makes me proud.
I have a quick question. Could you search through and find the first time that it was ever?
I think I did that one time.
I don't know if you can rank it by date.
You could. You used to. Now there's been so many more posts. I don't really know. But it was after I wrote Delay, Don't Deny. We were not using the terminology clean fast when I wrote Delay, Don't Deny because, I mean, it's not in there. I didn't say clean fasting because we hadn't started using it yet. But it was some point after that, it just stuck as a way of, you know, explaining. It just felt right, like you want your fast to be clean and like an actual fast. So the three fasting goals, really explain what a clean fast is all about. You know, we have three goals for the clean fast. Number one, we want to lower our insulin levels. And that's what we were just talking about, you know, and when Melanie was talking about Gary Taubes. Low insulin is what we want during the fast. And so we don't want to take in anything that makes your brain think that sweetener food, sugar, glucose is on the way. So that's why we avoid anything that tastes like food or is sweet, because that sets off the cephalic phase insulin response and your body releases insulin. How much insulin? Well, I think that's going to depend from person to person, so many factors. But if we know we don't want our insulin to be up, we want to actively keep it down. So avoid anything that's sweet, fruity flavored. We don't put fruit in our water. You know, anything that tastes like food, avoid. Fasting goal two is we want to tap into stored fat for fuel. So we avoid taking in sources of energy. So we're not going to put, you know, MCT oil in our coffee, because if you do, your body is going to use that for fuel. And it's an energy source. So you want your body to tap into your stored fat. So don't put anything in your coffee at all. No fat, no cream, no creamer. You don't want to take in exogenous ketones either. And our third fasting goal is we'd like to experience increased autophagy. And we know that if you take in protein, that leads to autophagy not being increased. It decreases autophagy. So that's why we avoid things like bone broth. I mean, think about all those things. Bone broth, cream, fat in our coffee, that's all food. And food is not fasting. So, you know, that's why I always say, you know, the quote, dirty fast isn't really fasting. I mean, you wouldn't eat a cheeseburger and say, oh, I just had a really dirty fast. I was extra dirty, right? You know, there's a line that you cross when it isn't fasting. And a lot of people throw around numbers. I don't know where they came up with these ideas, like, if you have fewer than 50 calories, you're not breaking the fast. Well, I mean, what if I ate one bite of pizza? What if I had one jelly bean every 10 minutes? Am I fasting? No. Those, you know, the safest bet is to not even have any of that. You know that you're fasting if you're fasting. You don't have to worry.
And what about non-caloric artificial sweeteners?
Well, that goes to fasting goal one that I talked about. You know, you don't want anything that tastes sweet, because that causes your body to think that glucose is coming in, because our bodies don't understand zero calorie diet soda. Because in nature, when our bodies, you know, have evolved to handle like fruit or sugar, anything that tasted sweet had a glucose hit coming along with it. And so our brain senses that sweetness coming in and says, ooh, got to get ready for a glucose hit. You know, our blood glucose is going to go up. We need some insulin. And so we pump out some insulin to deal with that. But because it's a zero calorie sweetener, I mean, the glucose doesn't come in because you're not really having any. And so that causes a lot of metabolic confusion. And the insulin goes, you know, goes up. But how much does it go up? You know, that's a great question. A lot of it depends on your metabolic health. You know, I have a blog post on jenstevens.com. It's like insulin response. Why doesn't everyone agree? Because sometimes people are like, no, that's ridiculous. Your body does not do that. But you can find, obviously, studies that say that that is what happens. Although you can find studies that show that is not what happens. But there's also some studies that I talk about in that blog post that says that people who are obese or overweight have a larger insulin response than other people.
Yeah, that's actually something that Gary talks about a lot in The Case for Keto, is people's individualized insulin responses, both to food and both to stimuli in the fasted state.
Exactly. So, you know, even though we have studies that show insulin response after these stimuli, does that mean every single person alive has that exact same insulin response? No. But we know that that is a potential. And if you're trying to lose weight, you don't want to have that potentially happening. We're all different. I bet my husband has a very small insulin response to anything ever, because he's always been so lean, always. And when we had our fasted insulin tested, his was lower than mine. Yeah, I mean, low insulin, hard to store fat. If you know that low insulin is connected to so many health benefits, I don't know why you'd risk it. Maybe you're a lucky person that doesn't release much insulin in response to a diet soda, but what if you're not? You know, hyperinsulinemia, having chronic high levels of insulin, does more than just cause you to gain weight. Chad's aunt had early onset Alzheimer's, and she was always really, really, really lean. But she always was drinking a regular Coke and having a candy bar. So I'm sure she kept her insulin up all the time. So they're calling Alzheimer's type 3 diabetes now.
I actually interviewed, what's today? Yesterday or 2 days ago? I was so excited. I interviewed the co-directors of the Brain Health and Alzheimer's Institute at Loma Linda. They're the authors of the Alzheimer's Solution.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that on Amazon.
It was really exciting because they are very, very vegan. And it's always really nice to bring on different viewpoints because so many of my guests are, you know, very, very steeped in the low carb and keto world. So it was nice to engage with them.
What did they say? Can you give us a little spoiler? Did they talk about insulin at all?
We didn't talk about insulin, I don't think. So they have what they believe are the four pathways to Alzheimer's. And I learned so much about Alzheimer's. Like, it's a very fascinating condition because it's sort of like aging. There's not one identified root cause because we know that, you know, beta amyloid formation and tau, quote, the problem. But the question is like, what is causing that?
Do they talk about the glymphatic system and lack of sleep?
They do in the book. We didn't on the show. But the interesting thing about the beta amyloid and tau is that, like, you can have that and not have Alzheimer's. So it's not, you know, directly, doesn't necessarily cause it. They think that there are four main pathways that lead to Alzheimer's. So number one is inflammation. Number two is oxidation. I'm going out of order because I'll save it. Number four is lipid dysregulation. Number three is glucose dysregulation / insulin resistance. Something fascinating. Did you know that the enzyme that is responsible for degrading insulin, so insulin degrading enzyme is also responsible for degrading tau protein, I think.
Yeah, I think I read this. And so that if you have too much insulin in your brain, it keeps the other from getting degraded, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's the theory of why, you know, the Alzheimer's would be called the type 3 diabetes, because it's your insulin's too high in your brain causing the action of the other to not happen.
It's partly that. It's also, I think, one of the main theories behind type 3 diabetes is that if insulin resistance occurs in the brain, then the brain cells literally are not getting fuel because they're insulin resistant. Oh, we did talk about that. It's coming back to me more. They made a very strong case that hands down the preferred source, and we talked about this at length on the show. So when it comes out, listeners, definitely check it out. They believe very firmly that glucose is the ideal and preferred source of fuel for the brain. A lot of people say that ketogenic diets are good for Alzheimer's and that ketones are a better fuel source, especially for people with Alzheimer's, but they think that really glucose is what the brain should be using and that we don't have enough long-term studies on low-carb or ketogenic diets to make a case for ketones.
You know, that is a really good point, because just because the brain does function well on ketones doesn't mean it's the preferred source for the brain.
Yeah. So that's what they believe very strongly. But what was really nice is they were so open to, because we talked about it a lot. They were so open to, you know, engaging in that dialogue. And they knew that my audience tends to be low carb. So I was really, really, really grateful for how the conversation unfurled. The thing we talked about with the low carb and keto diets was basically they think that, so like I said, lipid dysregulation is their fourth thing. They think that, you know, high cholesterol and lipid dysregulation, that high fat diets are primarily the cause of that, and that the way to address that is a whole foods high carb, but from like starches and whole foods. So they're very anti-sugar. They have a whole section on sugar and how bad it is. I think they even say in the book that it's like the worst thing for Alzheimer's.
Well, I mean, you know that Chad's aunt, she was high sugar all the time, never had a weight problem, skinny as a rail. But sugar, 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 and then early onset Alzheimer's.
Yeah, it was a really good conversation. And what I said, and this is something I believe, and I think I've talked about a lot on this show, and I said it to them, it's like my concerns with the low-carb diet and the keto diet for a lot of people, I think it's really, really amazing if you do it right and if you're strict about it, as far as like being on a super high-fat diet. But I think people get very casual with it sometimes, you know, so their carbs aren't quite low enough, or they flip in and out. And so they're in this state where they're often having a really high fat diet, and they might not be in the metabolic state to support having the health benefits from that. I think it can be potentially dangerous for a lot of people to experiment with a ketogenic diet if they're not doing it correctly.
Well, you know, it goes back to what Marty Kendall says, energy toxicity, right? Too much energy in the blood from any source is not a good thing.
Yeah. And so to clarify, I think that the safe approach to it is to not do a super high fat ketogenic diet. So like, which is more of Marty Kendall's approach and more my approach. So,
and it's starting to become more like in the community. I think the keto community is starting to be like, oh, okay. Yeah. Maybe we don't need to pound the fat.
If you go low carb, but you don't crazy ramp up the fat, then I think it's a lot easier to get all the health benefits of low carb without the potential issues of going super high fat. I'm glad it's becoming more of a nuanced conversation.
Yeah, because really, for so long, the number one thing people would say is, well, just eat more fat, add more fat. No, no.
The thing that they said was they were like, and again, this is coming from them, so it's hard to know exactly, but from what I've seen briefly, they were saying that the majority of the literature really does show that high lipids correlate to like Alzheimer's and all of these issues. Because I know a lot of people in the keto world will have extremely high lipids and make the argument that there's no health problems there because of the, you know, the ketogenic state and the context of it. But it can potentially be an issue for people. So,
yep. And only time will tell. Like you said, we don't have the long-term data.
Their names, it was Dr. Dean and Dr. Aisha Sherzai. I think that's how you say it. And they wrote The Alzheimer's Solution. I really want to get Dale. Is it Dale Bresden who wrote The Alzheimer's? What's the other one? He's the low carb guy who wrote the big Alzheimer's book.
And no wonder everyone is confused.
I know. Wait, what is his book? Because there's The Alzheimer's Solution and then there's the Alzheimer's. Wait, let me just look it up really quick.
I don't know.
Yeah. So there's The Alzheimer's Solution by the Sherzais, and then there's The End of Alzheimer's by Dr. Dale Bresden, and he approaches it from a low carb perspective. So now I read that book. So now I want to bring him on. Just, you know, I'm not trying to confuse people. I'm trying to like give as much information as possible and people can make their own decisions.
Well, and I really think that probably if you go down to the root of almost every one of these approaches, it's like eat real food underlying it. It's the ultra processed food that's the problem. If we just got rid of ultra processed food, maybe we could have our fat and our carbs together and just be healthy. Don't eat all the time. Do intermittent fasting. Eat real food.
Like Dr. Lustig's book.
It's real food. All right. Are we ready to go on to the next question? This is from April. April says, hello, my name is April and I'm newish to IF. I've been doing it off and on for about 2 months now. I have a question I'd love some input on. I've been listening to your IF stories for a while. I've listened to most of the episodes. I started fasting 16-8, opening my window at 11, closing at 7. I really wanted to have dinner with my family, so I figured that was the best window for me. I hate black coffee, so I was having coffee with just stevia and water or bubble water. Fasting was okay, but kind of miserable. Wasn't really enjoying my coffee without almond milk and was watching the clock till I could eat. Once I would eat, I would crash. Anyway, I learned about clean fasting, so I cut stevia and would only have plain water and plain coffee during my fast. Still hated fasting. It was a misery. I would still randomly crash after eating, and I would notice that when dinner time rolled around, I wasn't even hungry because I would basically binge once my window was open. Now, this is just me, side note here. Since she's only been doing it off and on for about 2 months, I wonder if she gave herself time to adjust to the clean fast, you know? Because if you switch to clean fasting after not fasting clean, it might be amazing from the minute you start, but now it might not be. You might have, you know, I would consider that day one and give yourself that 28 days to adjust. So unless she gave herself 28 days to adjust, I'm just throwing out there that that might be why it was still miserable, because the adjustment period can really be miserable. Anyway, all right. So she said, so I had a thought, why not do a morning window and open it with my coffee the way I like it? So I switched. Window opens at 6:30 to 7 a.m. and closes 8 hours later. Huge change. Fasting was suddenly easy and the scale began to move. Now I'm excited to fast. My question is, it seems that most skip breakfast. And then she said she listened to a podcast episode that recommended skipping breakfast. But she says, why do I feel awful when I skip breakfast, but perfect when I have a morning window? And is there the same benefit either way with a morning or evening window? By the way, I accidentally tested it again today because I had a longer window yesterday. So I waited till 11 for breakfast today and crashed. Feel horrible. Thank you. By the way, stats. I'm not overweight, 138-ish at 5'6". My goal is 130, and I'm fasting not just for weight loss, but that is a goal as well. Thanks for any insight you have. By the way, I know you'll probably say, just do what window works for you. Yes, that is what I was going to say. And IF is flexible, but the questioning me wants to know why I seem to be the opposite of most IFers. April.
All right, April. So this is a wonderful question. And now, okay, I wish we had saved this for next week because I think I'll have a lot more insight on it next week. But I guess I can tease the information that I think I'm about to learn. Remember, Jim, when you were talking about the power of when, the chronotypes, like the lion, dolphin, bear?
Yes. Yep.
Dr. Bruce.
Oh, were you interviewing him?
Yes.
Oh, yay.
I'm so excited. We have a random mutual friend. Like, he's not connected to this industry at all, but I was just catching up with him on the phone and he was like, yeah, I'm friends with him. He's like, I'll introduce you. I'm really excited. So I was really familiar with his book, but I hadn't actually read it. So I'm reading it right now. I think it hadn't really occurred to me thinking about it from that perspective, but I think that explains a lot why some people, you know, respond better to early versus late eating windows.
We have different chronotypes.
Yeah. So I'm still reading it right now, but what I've learned thus far is the dolphin, which the dolphin is me, which, by the way, the dolphin is the insomniatic type, like all by itself. I thought I was the wolf, like the one that stays up really late anyway, but I'm going all over the place. I apologize. His chronotype takes into account not just circadian rhythm, like sleep cycle, but also your personality and basically everything. And they all go together. They're all connected. I haven't learned about the bear, so I don't know if the bear eats breakfast. The wolf definitely doesn't like breakfast. Neither does the dolphin. I don't think the bear does, but the lion is the one that like gets up early and like eats and like fuels for the day and then like goes.
See, I'm a lion and I don't do that.
Have you taken the quiz?
I took his quiz, yeah.
And it said you were a lion, not a bear?
Yeah, it said I was a lion.
Okay.
Because I wake up super early.
True. Well, so much for that idea.
I mean, who knows? You know, we're all more complicated than just four types, right?
It seems that there is something intrinsic to our rhythms. Like we have metabolic rhythms. I think some people's rhythms, like genetically, they just are breakfast people.
Yep. I have a good friend. She's one of the moderators in the Delay Don't Deny community. And she has a morning window. She feels better having a morning window. She just does it. And so I believe that that is the best window time for her. And I know it is not the best time for me, which is why I get so frustrated. And I know we've said this before, Melanie, when we hear the whole everyone would be better if they had a morning window. You know, there's that theory being, you know, tossed around based on insulin response and glucose response and your metabolic whatever, whatever, and your circadian rhythm. They're calling it circadian fasting, I think, and that everyone should have their eating window at this certain time of the day. We're just not like that.
Yeah, 100%. He thinks we developed these rhythms because, like, as we evolved as a species, it had to do with different parts of the tribe needing to be awake at different times so that the community was always safe. So a tribe in the wilderness, everybody can't be asleep all at the same time.
So it's a benefit for us to all have different rhythms.
Yeah, because if everybody was asleep all at the same time, the community would be unprotected. So we naturally evolved to have people who were up early, like protecting, then people throughout the day, and then people at night, and then the dolphins that are just like waking up to everything.
Oh, maybe I'm a dolphin.
You're not a dolphin, I don't think.
Oh, okay.
Do you have insomnia?
Well, more now after menopause. I didn't used to.
Well, so you could take the quiz. And what's really funny, though, is when you take it. So the very first thing at the beginning identifies the dolphins. And so if you get dolphin, then you don't get to take the rest of the quiz because it categorizes you as dolphin.
Maybe I should take it again.
Yeah, you should take it. Let me know. I'm dying to know. So I took it and it was like dolphin. I was like, okay, well, I was like, but I really want to see if maybe I'm a wolf, because I thought I was a wolf. So then I took it again and I was like, okay, maybe I can answer these a different way. And then I kept doing it. I literally had to take it like 4 times. And every time it was like dolphin, dolphin, dolphin. And then finally I was able to like change my answers enough that it let me take the rest of the quiz.
But I mean, I totally want to go to sleep at 9:30 at night every night.
You're not a dolphin.
Okay. Like I can't help it and I cannot sleep late. I cannot.
You're not a dolphin. No, you're not. The dolphins are like super groggy in the morning. Takes a long time to like get their energy out the day. And then randomly at like 9, it's like, woo.
No, I'm definitely not that.
No, I'm not that.
I'm not a dolphin.
He didn't make this connection yet, but I just read this and I'm making the connection in my head. He said the dolphins are the only chronotype where all of their rhythms, like their blood pressure, their body temperature, all of that is inversed. So that all goes up at night. Maybe that explains why I want like all my food, you know, like I eat really well, like really late. So I'm excited to keep reading it. And there's personality too.
So I would say about April, it totally could be that the morning window is when her body is primed to eat, and that's the better time to eat. That totally could be it. I'm still not completely sure that she's adjusted to fasting. I just don't know. Because she's only about 2 months in. She's been doing it off and on for 2 months, so she may not be fat adapted. So, April, if you're not fat adapted, you really can't judge, you know, how you feel yet, because you're not there. So that's the thing. It depends on when you started the clean fast and whether you're fat adapted yet. If you've been doing it for a while and you are fat adapted and you 100% feel better when you eat in the morning, then that is definitely a clue that that's your good window time. Your body really does tell you.
Even when I wasn't fat adapted, I was never a morning eater. Like I was never hungry at breakfast.
Well, I ate breakfast because I enjoy the recreation of eating. And I enjoy eating breakfast, and they told you to eat breakfast. But I did realize earlier on that I was hungrier when I did eat breakfast than if I waited.
Me too.
Like, I did know that was true for me, but that didn't stop me from eating it.
That's the way I was.
Yeah. I loved having breakfast. You know, like, it was not a good breakfast either. I was having, like, a drive-through breakfast. Oh, Lordy.
I mean, it could be that she's not fat adapted. But I feel like maybe intrinsically she's just a breakfast eater.
Yeah, it could be either of those. So I can't say it's one or the other. It absolutely might be that she's a morning person, but it might not be. It might just be not fat adapted yet. So I just really would be hesitant for anybody to judge what intermittent fasting is going to be prior to when you're adapted. Because your body's lying to you during the adaptation phase.
Good point. So we have time for one last question, and this is from Jan. And Jan says, I'm sure I'm not the only one who struggles with this. For the most part, I am comfortable doing 16-8 fast regularly. However, when I am at work and come 11, 12, 1 p.m., I just want to eat. It's more like an inner clock, and I am not really hungry, but I feel like I have to eat. I'm not sure how to move beyond that point. Any suggestions? I enjoy your podcast and the guests you have on. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Jan. Here's the thing. If what you're doing is working and you're eating at 11, 12, 1, and it feels right and you're happy and you're getting the results you want, then you don't need to move beyond that point. You know, you're fasting, if you're doing 16-8, you feel good with 16-8, you're comfortable doing 16-8, it's working for you, then it's okay. We sometimes get into our heads that, you know, you should want to fast more necessarily, or you want to push your window up just to be doing it. But if what you're doing feels right, then it's okay. It's okay to open your window at noon, even if you're not like super duper hungry. Maybe this is your body's sweet spot. Maybe if you waited till 4, you would binge. I don't know. So if, however, you're not getting the results you want, if you feel like, you know, every day I'm opening at 11, 12, 1, and I'm not even hungry and I don't even need to eat and I'm not getting the results I want, that's when you need to have like a conversation with yourself and say, okay, am I going to choose to eat because I want to eat, or am I going to choose to not eat and then see if I can meet my goals by delaying my eating window? So you've just got to decide what you want to do, which might be easier said than done. I get it. You know, as I just said a couple minutes ago when we were talking about breakfast, eating is a lot more than just taking in nutrients. It's recreational. It's something that we enjoy. It's pleasurable. It's a break for, you know, from what we were doing. You take a break to eat and it feels like a nice rest period. You know, if, I don't know if I'm explaining myself well. You know, it's a routine. It feels nice. So you just have to decide, is what I'm doing right now working for me? And if so, it's okay to eat at that point if that's when I want to eat. But if what I'm doing is not working for me, how can I flip that switch and tell myself, you know what, you just want to eat, you don't need to eat, you know, find something else to do, get busy, maybe have a special beverage, have your, you know, San Pellegrino mineral water that you have every day at that time, you know, to make it, you know, special instead of like you have to eat. Now you're going to have your special San Pellegrino. I don't know. What do you think, Melanie?
That was really great. I hadn't really thought about it this way before, but so when it comes to food, and then perception of hunger, perception of appetite, all these things. People experience things all over the spectrum. I mean, a lot of people who write to us, it's the opposite of Jan's, what she's experiencing as a potential issue. So, you know, a lot of people are, feel like they're, you know, ravenously hungry when they're not supposed to be eating. But then some people like Jan, it's when they're, quote, decided to eat, but they're not hungry. The nice thing about fasting is, in a way, you don't even have to worry about all of that, because what you can do is you, and this ties into what you just said, Jen, as far as like if it's working or not. So you can pick your window, commit to it, try it out, trial run it, regardless of feeling hungry or not feeling hungry, you know, just trying out that window and then seeing if that window is working, rather than having to focus and fixate on your relationship with food and if you're hungry or if you're not hungry. It's just like picking the window and just like resting in the confidence of trying out this window and then seeing if it works. Does that make sense? Like, it's a different place to focus. You don't have to like overanalyze so much the hunger or the lack of hunger, because you're just, you know, you're trying out the window. So I think it's exactly what you said, Jen. Like, if she's doing this window and it's, but she's happy with her energy and her body composition and everything, then maybe it's completely fine that she's eating, you know, the way she's eating. I like what you said.
Well, good. Yeah. It just depends. It might not be a problem. Sometimes we identify things as problems because we think they are based on what somebody said, for example. And, you know, we've all heard, never eat if you're not truly hungry. Well, we all, you know, quote, fail when it comes to that. We all eat when we're not truly hungry.
Like, hunger is a spectrum. And one person's hunger may not even register as another person's hunger. It's so subjective.
Well, and one of the saddest sayings, I don't remember exactly what how it's said, but one of the saddest mindsets to me of all is the one that you see where it's like, food is not entertainment. It is just to fuel your body. I'm like, that is depressing, because food is supposed to be a pleasure. That would be like saying activities with your spouse are only designed to procreate, and you're not allowed to enjoy it. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's one of those puritanical mindsets of, well, enjoying it is a sin, so stop enjoying it. You can enjoy all the physical pleasures, and that includes food. I got a little racy, sorry.
No, I was thinking, I was like, I feel like this is like the most,
what am I going to say? I see, I was an elementary teacher. I can't be too racy. I can't say certain things because I was trying not to say anything like that. Anyway.
No, you said that really well. That would go over kids' heads, I think. I don't know. The one slight caveat I would add is I think some people, if there are people who struggle with what they perceive as food addiction, sometimes they feel very free in sort of embracing a food as fuel rather than pleasure standpoint. If that's working for you to like view food that way, I don't want to discourage people from doing that. But in general, I agree that food is like meant to be enjoyed.
It's meant to be enjoyed. Yeah. But I mean, you can even enjoy that mindset makes it sound like, you know, the only thing you enjoy is like garbage food, but you can enjoy a Brussels sprout. You can enjoy a healthy food. You can enjoy a tomato. I mean, I made some beans yesterday in my pressure cooker, and oh my gosh, they were so good. You know, I mean, that was pleasure, eating these beans. It wasn't like I was eating chocolate cake. Assuming that pleasurable food has to equate, you know, quote, bad food. That's, you know.
Yeah, no. Exactly. I thought that was a really great note to end on.
Awesome. Yeah, me too.
All right. Well, this has been absolutely wonderful. So a few things for listeners before we go. If you would like to submit your own questions for the podcast, you can directly email questions at ifpodcast.com, or you can go to ifpodcast.com and you can submit questions there. The show notes for today's episode will be at ifpodcast.com/episode216. You can get all of the stuff that we like at ifpodcast.com/stuff we like. And you can follow us on Instagram. I am Melanie Avalon, Jen is Jen Stevens. On Instagram, we're IF Podcast. Can ever remember that. All right. So anything else from you, Jen, before we go?
Nope, that's it.
Right. Well, this has been absolutely wonderful, and I will talk to you next week.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Please remember that everything discussed on the show is not medical advice. We're not doctors. You can also check out our other podcasts, Intermittent Fasting Stories and the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. Theme music was composed by Leland Cox. See you next week.